Hey there. We at Blue Wire just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this podcast. We know everything outside is pretty scary and uncertain, but we're committed to helping you get through your day by talking about the sports and teams that you love most. If you're looking for more great podcasts to distract you, check out BlueWirePods.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast and stay safe.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 424. Today's show is brought to you by Bet Online. Make sure to use code BLUEWIRE when you sign up to get your welcome bonus. Scott, what is going on this fine Monday morning?
Yeah, recording on a Monday. We had Easter yesterday. I hope everybody had a fantastic Easter with your family Zoom calls and all of the weird things that we're doing in today's age. I know we did it. We had our family like board of video calls or of video windows trying to coordinate who's talking next, who's arguing over somebody else, who's yelling at the other person because they're talking over somebody else. And then where we can blame technology. So it was an interesting one. It was an interesting Easter for us.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting for everybody. Interesting is quite the word for it. It was also Leanne's brother's 30th birthday yesterday.
Yeah.
And we're talking about that.
So he's officially old.
I'm like, dude, this is a birthday you're never going to forget.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. They'll be turning 30 in the apocalypse.
Yeah, very, very unique circumstances, obviously. Same old, right? That's sort of the deal at this point. Do you realize it's April 13th as we're recording? It's been like pretty much exactly 1 month since spring training was shut down. Feels like it's been a year.
It does, because when you have monotony and just like complete, the repetition of every single day, it all blends together as one long day, one very long day. And yeah, time goes by much slower. So yeah, it feels like forever. And that was a really, really depressing week going into it, honestly. Now that I'm thinking back to it, appreciate you rekindling those emotions.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. But we're still working through all that, actually. That's a good reminder. Let me do some housekeeping. Everybody who went to that game or had tickets for that game in spring training, for our event, we had 200 people ready to go for that event, which would have been a fantastic time. All of the refunds were issued long ago, long, long ago. The week after everything went down, we refunded everybody's money. It took a really long time for it to go through the banks. So there are the majority of everybody who went to that game or had tickets to that game should be refunded at this point. If you do not have a refund, please get in touch with us. Shoot me an email. You can shoot an email to events@bronxpinstripes.com. And just let me know your order number, please, and we'll make sure it's taken care of. Some circumstances have been people's cards were lost or they had to cancel them for whatever reason and, like, you know, all those things. So when we refund it back to the card that you purchased it on, it's been hung up. Some of them have been hung up in purgatory, and I don't even know where the money is, but it's not getting to some people. We're working through that. So if you have an issue similar to that, please email me and we will we'll get it taken care of. As far as the 2020 BP Crew events for the remainder of the season, just so everybody knows what our plan is, we've been kind of stalling to, you know, hold out hope. I think at this point, there's just, you know, nothing. There's not much to hold on to as far as hope that the season will look anything like we can predict, or any of these dates will fall on where they're supposed to. So here, what we're doing is we're refunding everybody for every game for 2020. And if we get a season that looks like anything and we're able to get back into Yankee Stadium and we're all able to get back together in a group in some capacity, then we will work with the Yankees and figure out group tickets, but we'll do it separately from what we've already planned. So essentially all of that is out the window and we're going to go through the process. We're starting to refund every single person for anything that you've purchased in 2020, which I can tell you right now will be a process and take a little bit of time. So please bear with us. But that's the plan right now.
Yeah. Because we look at the plans that were surfaced from Major League Baseball over the last week, and doesn't seem like games at Yankee Stadium with fans in the stands is
no, I haven't really hinted towards that. For this haven't year. Really hinted towards that. Yeah, and there's just so many. Like, we have games, you know, all throughout the season. I don't want to be holding anybody's money for no reason. So yeah. We're gonna just give everybody back their money, and then we'll figure it out when everybody else figures it out, I guess, or maybe a couple days ahead of that, so that we can get good seats.
So let's talk about those plans: the Arizona plan, the Grapefruit and Cactus League plan. And then I'm going to put the Japan plan to the side. But first, the Arizona plan, which first came out, I think, last Tuesday. Jeff Passan reported it. And Jeff Passan is a connected guy for Major League Baseball. He's one of the guys that the commissioner's office will filter information through.
He's the ESPN guy.
Yeah.
He's the ESPN guy.
By the way, is it Passan or Passan?
Jeff Passan.
Because I've heard people say Passan.
I'm pretty sure it's not Passan.
Okay.
Pretty sure it's Passan.
Okay. Anyway, Jeff Passan reported that MLB is looking at plans to start in as early as May in Arizona at all those spring training facilities. And the beautiful thing about the Arizona facilities is they're all within like an hour and a half drive of one another. It's basically like a gigantic compound.
Yeah. Whereas a campus. It's a campus of baseball.
Whereas the Florida sites are spread out throughout the state.
Right.
Yeah, you have like the Yankees and the Rays and the Blue Jays all kind of within the same hour drive bubble, but it's a 3-hour drive to get across and down to, say, where the Mets play or where some other teams play in Florida. Yeah. So that just makes it a little bit more complicated for getting a bunch of games in a short amount of time. And they were
especially if you're trying to quarantine people too. It's
right.
That really complicates things.
Basically, they were going to quarantine the entire Major League Baseball, all 30 teams. A roster of 40 plus players you would absolutely need to have for this scenario.
And coaches.
Because the complications here is there's no minor league season. So if a guy goes down with an injury, you have to replace him. But if there's no minor league season, then there's no one ready waiting in the wings who's in baseball shape. So you have to have, like, probably, I would guess, 50 players per roster who
quarantined because you can't pull anybody in that's not quarantined.
Exactly. So you have to have like 50 players quarantined and in baseball shape. So maybe they would have like morning games with each other for the non-26 man roster. You know what I'm saying? Like the extra 15 players are playing like simulated games against one another at 8 o'clock in the morning when no real baseball games are
going
on.
Ghost man on first.
Yeah. So there's that whole thing. And then, like you said, coaches, trainers,
personnel, just like people working the stadium, the groundskeepers,
the hotels where they're the food service people, like TV crews,
people to open the facilities, people to close the facilities, people to clean the facilities.
When you add it up, it's like conservatively like 3,000 people.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, more conservatively, yes.
So
it's a lot of people. It's a lot of people that don't make millions of dollars as well, that have livelihoods and families and are depended on at home for childcare at certain hours and for mowing the lawn, because can't pay some kid $50 or $30 to mow the lawn when you're, you know, making $40,000 a year doing whatever. Like there are so many trickle down effects to something like that, that I don't see how you could possibly do it.
Yeah. And
unless like the players are cleaning toilets as well.
Judge is out there mowing the lawn before he gets
becomes that Baker Mayfield commercial where they're, you know, he's cleaning the stadium for the people to come in.
Right. And so they're talking about all these different facilities plus Chase Field, which is where the Diamondbacks play. So that gets them to all of the fields that they would need to put on games simultaneously. But in Arizona in June, it's 110 degrees. And I get it. Like, these players are getting paid millions of dollars to play a game. Like, if it's a little hot, it's a little hot. It's not the end of the world. But that does cause complications. Like, it causes fatigue. It causes – it's just not safe and healthy to be out at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when it's 110 degrees in the desert.
Yeah, these guys are also wearing, you know, long pants, long sleeves or short sleeves with stuff underneath them. And like, they're wearing things that are not like a light uniform. It's not like you're out there in shorts and no shirt on. Like, these guys are out there working hard. And the other thing about baseball, obviously, is it's not continuous. It's more of like a, you know, you ramp up and then you get down. You ramp up and you get down. Like there's opportunities for people to get hurt.
Loose muscles, though. So let fewer pulled muscles.
Hopefully. You'd think so.
It's a dry heat. It's a dry heat.
It is a dry heat.
So I'm going to go through some things that they were talking about implementing in the Arizona plan. An electronic strike zone to allow the home plate umpire not to be right next to the catcher and the batter, but also to, I guess, speed up games with an electronic strike zone. Because
you think Joe West is going out there in any capacity in 100 degree heat in Arizona?
How many innings does he make it before he just keels over and dies?
I mean, Joe West, maybe it'll be good for him. Maybe he'll be like the ever shrinking man.
Sweat it out.
Yeah, just sweat it out.
Sweat the fat off of him.
They got to wear pads. Like imagine being a catcher on a daily basis playing out there.
Gary Sanchez.
Who's cleaning that equipment?
Gary Sanchez just sweating profusely out there in the Arizona.
Someone's got to clean Joe West.
I think you would have to play night games. You would have to play night games.
Right. Yeah, that would make sense because it's a dry heat, so it gets down, I would assume, much cooler in the evening.
You could play day games in Arizona in the dome in the Chase Field. So you get two games. Maybe you could even fit in three games there. You could play like a noon, a 4 p.m., and an 8 p.m. And then all of the other games at 8 p.m. or 7 p.m. at night in the outdoor facilities.
So because it's a dry heat in the desert like that, I would assume the evenings become much cooler because of that.
So
right?
Maybe you start at 5 p.m. or something like that.
Because the sun is, you know, the entire, it's not, you don't have the humidity to deal with and all that as well that knocks you down. In the evening, it's pretty enjoyable, I would assume. I don't remember what, Arizona is in July.
I've never been to Arizona.
I was in Arizona when I was like 12 at the Grand Canyon and all that.
Actually, that's a lie. I've been to Arizona. I went to the Grand Canyon.
There you go. So I don't remember what it was like in the evening though. Can't speak to that. We can ask some people though. Troy, who's involved at Bronx Pinstripes and one of our moderators in Facebook, lives in Arizona, in Phoenix. So we'll ask him.
They also talked about no mound visits from the catcher or pitching coach. So those two things, electronic strike zone and reduced mound visits or no mound visits.
Are we going on the earpiece then?
Maybe, but either way, I'm okay with those because those are something I think that is being talked about already. Don't those seem like things like they want to get past or want to start testing in the major leagues, but they need approval and voting from the players? But this is now an excuse just to get it into the game, being like, hey, guys, this is the circumstance we're dealt. We have to implement this. Deal with it.
Well, yeah, for this one, nobody can say anything. So if they were trying to sneak in something that they wanted to do in real life, in a real season, then yeah, this would be the time to do it. This is the time to get your agenda into a game right now. If you have some kind of agenda that you want to pass, now is the time to step up and put up a good case because you have a much higher chance of it getting implemented. So yeah.
7-inning doubleheaders to fit more games in. I hate this idea. Because
this is where it completely loses me as far as like the baseball.
I will gladly sacrifice games and just play the 9-inning game. If the decision is 80 games of 9 innings or 110 games with 7-inning doubleheaders, I don't need the extra games of this makeshift fake high school baseball. Like just give me a regular 9-inning game, but fewer of them. I feel like that's a better product.
For sure. You know, I mean, so I've talked about this in the past, like, I want baseball like the next guy wants baseball, but I don't want you to touch the game of inside the game. I don't want you to touch the workings of the game. So if we have to play less games, okay, that's one thing because now we're on a time crunch. But if you start messing with 7-inning games, you know, it changes the element of baseball. It changes the just everything about it. It really is one of those things that affects the actual product. So I'm not about that. I'm not about that in the least. Things like mound visits, like, yeah, you could affect it in that way, but it's a much, much smaller way to do that. It's a better way. It's a more discreet way, if you will. Shortening the actual game. That's like saying, okay, guess what? On the third ball, you're going to first base. Like, it's just dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it would just be to fit in more games. So you're fitting in more games under this circumstance. It's not like you're getting more gates because there is no fans in the stands. So you're getting more TV. You're getting more commercial time, essentially. That's like what it would be for, is more commercial time on TV.
they're definitely going to experiment with what they'll do digitally, right? They're going to have different cameras in the stands. They're going to have, like, I know they talk about it.
Players are going to be mic'd up for more of a TV experience. That's all that stuff is good. I mean, we talked about they should be implementing that regardless.
Yes,
and if you want to do more commercials, in-game commercials, so like the announcers are reading ads more often, or there's in picture-in-picture things, or I don't freaking care, slap a logo on the chest. Like, if it means like you're going to make up some revenue, it really does not matter to me.
Guess what?
At the bottom line,
they ain't coming back from that.
I know they're not coming back from that, but I think that's where it's going anyway.
It is going that way. It's going to look like a Chinese basketball league at some point in the near future, but that's where the agendas start coming in that people are going to try to get it passed now. Like, okay, we could do this. It's going to cost money. We're not going to have as much revenue. Ads on the uniforms. Go. Next year, some people would say you already have a Nike ad on your uniform right now. So
true.
Let's just move it forward.
What other areas on the baseball field, not on the players specifically, but on the baseball field other than the wall, that would be visible for a TV audience for ads? Like on the bases?
Can we get someone's logo in the grass?
In the grass.
We get logos in the outfield grass.
You know how on the pitcher's mound, you see the back pretty clearly where the rosin is and everything?
Yeah.
What if you just paint a State Farm logo there?
In the back of the... Yeah, I'm thinking more of like, you know, we get a guy out there to mow it
but I don't know if that really comes across on TV unless you get an overhead shot.
Oh, they're going to have drones flying. Drones are flying, baby.
Okay, who's operating the drone? Is that guy quarantined?
That guy could be in New York. That guy could be anywhere. I mean, they could do that from distance. So, yeah, he could be quarantined.
What is the point? So they're talking about having the electronic strike zones, but umpires are still going to be on the field. Why?
Right. You know, just to be there.
What's the point?
Just to be there.
Just because they have jobs and they need salaries paid, basically?
Just to have, that authoritative figure, you know, to have the Joe West of the world there, just in case things go awry.
Okay, I get it. Maybe one umpire to regulate things, and he can be any. He doesn't even necessarily need to be on the field because we can tell if a guy is safe or out, ball or strike, fair or foul, caught or not caught, from digital technology at this point.
So here's the thing also with the digital technology, the amount of things that we want to get done, like if they did all the... Now they have to fit all of these stadiums that are in the minor or spring training with more of these technologies.
That's,
so
that's probably going to be a
there's going to be a massive, you know, technology like hardware cost to get all of this done to outfit these places. But you're also pooling this right to get from all of the owners, from baseball, from whomever. I'm sure you would get some people working with you to get this accomplished. And then you'd have all of them playing in the same stadium. So it wouldn't be as expensive. Plus you don't have, you know, the,
no, but it's
the
still
logistics.
The number. Okay. It's not 30.
Still the amount of cameras, but if you had like Spotman technology on the lines going now, and we had like the tennis thing going with lasers, you know, shooting from their freaking eyeballs, like that is something that they could implement quickly, I would assume relatively quickly. And because everybody's playing in the same stadiums, it could be one of those costs that is almost subsidized, like everybody's going at it and is able to pitch in.
What is it? It's 16 facilities. Or no, I think it's 14 facilities.
Yeah.
Instead of 30. But.
Right. And everybody's pulling in. So you start pulling that like, you know, like a international pool spending money. Like everybody's throwing their pot in, and what, you know, if it's a percentage of whatever. But it's a way to do it. And I think they're going to have to ramp up the technology because the technology will replace human beings in a lot of capacities, right? Especially umpires, which is fine. Let's video game this thing.
I mean, if the umpires are wrong and inconsistent, it's not even the wrong that bothers me. It's the inconsistency that bothers me most from umpires.
If you're given an inch off the plate and you're doing it all day, I got no problem with that. Maybe an inch is a lot, but...
Right. And if it's consistent, but even that is like, okay, but then the next day it's a different strike zone because there's a different umpire behind the plate. Like, no, the strike
I don't
zone
mind
is
that.
The strike zone.
I understand that, but I also kind of don't mind that. There's a human element of that where like, you got to know who's behind the plate.
It's been part of baseball forever. But think about it logically. That's stupid.
You can't think of it logically because there's human beings involved.
It's the only sport that legitimately the rules change from game to game.
Well, that's not true because you have umpires in football making calls that they see or they don't see.
Pass interference because everyone's got a slightly different interpretation of it. But fouls and stuff like that.
All of this stuff. There's a lot of things that are going down for interpretation.
But the strike zone is involved in every single pitch. Every play of every Major League Baseball game involves the strike zone.
Some will tell you that every single play in the NFL, there's an offensive lineman holding a defensive lineman.
Okay.
Some will say.
I'm trying to equate it to like what football would be, and it's like a yard. Oh, this referee in football thinks a yard is this, and the next guy thinks a yard is this. So that wasn't really a first down. Like it's like almost like that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like the chain, like if the chain guy was like an eye test.
Yeah.
It's if like the chain guy was like, you know what? Actually, I had it over here. Like this is where I was. I was standing here. I wasn't. You know, this was not anything definitive. Yeah.
The strike zone is involved, is defined in the rule book. And I get there's human error. And that's, when you have an umpire, human error is always going to be there. But it shouldn't be like, oh, this guy just thinks in his mind the strike zone is different than the other guy. Because it's stupid. It's one of the many stupid things that
has been around for a very long time.
And speaking of stupid, I think this last thing that baseball has talked about, having players sit in empty stands 6 feet apart, which is the recommended social distancing, instead of in a dugout, is stupid. If you're already quarantined together,
yeah,
and you're working out and you're in the same clubhouse getting changed and you're eating together and you're doing all this stuff together, okay, you go sit in the stands
6 feet away from each other.
So freaking stupid.
Yeah, it's really. There's holes in this thing. There's no doubt about it. They thought about this for a little bit. Look, I mean, at the end of the day, when they floated this, this was definitely just like, here, ESPN, I know you guys are losing so much money in ratings.
Why?
Based on what we're doing. I'm going to throw this out to give people to talk about because they got nothing to do.
Maybe. So, maybe. Because it was obviously floated through Passan. If it's a half-baked idea, why float a half-baked idea?
Manfred's been doing this. Like, this is kind of becoming his MO. We've seen things that are floated out there. We saw the rule changes. How many times are rule changes floated out there into the public?
The playoff format.
Yeah. Like all of these things have been floated out there. Like we're seeing things from the commissioner's office that have definitely been purposely leaked to certain people on, you know, to gauge reaction. And I think that
it's always negative though. It's always negative.
In baseball, they're okay with the negative publicity they're of the ilk to saying, all PR is good PR.
But they don't act like that, though. They release statements, and you're like, oh, yeah, oh, no, there's no bad PR.
Well, because they're trying to trick you to think they don't think that.
Then they immediately walk it back. They're like, oh, no, we didn't really mean that.
Because the reaction was bad. So they're like, well, you know, 1 out of 20, maybe we'll hit, and then we could just get behind it and be like, yeah, you know, we were really excited, so we had to leak this.
Okay, if all the executives at Major League Baseball are too stupid to understand what's going to get positive and negative feedback, why don't they just pull like 25 baseball fans and they'll tell you
25. You want
all you
25.
Need.
How are you going to identify the 25? Twitter?
Okay, we can be two of them.
If we're two of them, they're two very different polars. Like the personalities now play into it. Like you're looking at the negative side of everything. I'm just trying to get
baseball. Yeah, but
that's
good. You're trying to get like a decent gauge.
I'm saying you got to have then you got to have sample sizes of different types of people and all these different things.
You don't even need sample sizes for a lot of these statements that they release to know it's going to be bad negative feedback. There's no way this idea is going to work. 0% chance of this working.
Right. Well, that's why I say that I don't think they care if it's negative. I think they just want to get out there and in the news.
And we haven't even discussed the fact that these players have to isolate from their families for 4+ months. And I get it. They're already on the road during the season for half a year.
Can the family come in isolation with them? Then you have more facilities. Then you have more logistics.
Yeah, that's just like more logistics. Maybe some players want to get away from their wife and kids for 4+ months.
Some players don't have wife and kids.
But also, like Gerrit Cole is having a child in June. So he's going to miss his child's birth to go in quarantine?
Nope.
So
probably not.
So then he has to, when he goes, he's got to be gone for at minimum.
If you're there for the moment, baby pops out, boom. Now you go back in a bubble.
2 weeks
minimum. 14 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what they're still recommending, or are we beyond that at this point? Who knows?
Who knows? I saw a new symptom is fizzing, where the whole body just feels like it's vibrating.
Fizzing?
That's what they're calling it.
Fizzing.
Fizzing. It's like your body is like fizzing, like carbonation, like in a drink, like kind of like bubbly.
Oh.
That's a new symptom.
Okay. A new symptom?
Fizzing might require more. I mean, it sounds like a drug that you do in an EDM club, but it's also a symptom of coronavirus.
Okay.
The Grapefruit and Cactus League plan is kind of like it takes the Arizona plan and makes it more logical, in my opinion. And that's you're shaking your head. But
no, keep going. I'm just giving you a facial reaction. I'll let you know about it in a minute. Don't worry.
It's everyone goes back to their own facilities that they already have established, quarantine in their own facilities, and you play a modified schedule with a different league setup, because there's the Arizona League and the Florida League, so there's no more National League and American League, and then they're going to break up the divisions based on geolocation within the states of each one. And there's still all of the same problems we talked about with the Arizona plan, but I think it makes the feasibility of putting on all of these games more realistic, because the facilities are already there for each team.
I guess the problem is, again, the whole reason we're doing this is because there's a virus out there that's highly contagious. And in order for that thing not to spread, the whole reason everybody's staying in their houses and doing all these things is so that they're away from people and not interacting with people on a daily basis, you know, social distancing and all. The fact when you start getting into Florida, we talked about this, you're losing a lot of that. You can't quarantine people when you're like free reign and you have all these things. So whether it's...
Oh, no, I'm not thinking free reign. Like, I'm not thinking everyone goes back to their house and then goes out grocery shopping. Like, they're all still quarantined. It's just then they go to their own training facilities at their own ballpark.
My point, you're integrating now into a community of people who are also taking care of these parks that are not in a smaller confined area similar to what
Arizona
is. I guess
you're right.
Like,
it's more parks to take care of.
You're more parks to take care of, more of like you're going through like the, it's just every, I don't know. It's just more integrated to the way that it doesn't, I don't see it fitting. I don't see it happening.
What
if you're doing this in one area and one area only, maybe. If you're doing it now in one larger area as far as geographically, and then the thing in Arizona, which already didn't work. So you're just making it worse, honestly, as far as that whole thing goes.
What if in July they can resume play and quarantining is not required because like people can go back and do things, but social gatherings are still not recommended. Right. So the idea of going back and everyone playing in their major league park doesn't make sense, because that's just going to add more travel and more logistics to it. So they say everyone go back to their spring training facility and we're going to play under these new Grapefruit and Cactus League settings.
So if that were the case and the CDC said you can go back to your job and do your things like that, then I could see that being a much more feasible plan. And in fact, I think that's probably the most realistic plan. But it's all depending on what the CDC says, I think, you know, as far as like being able to go back and for them to play, for them not having to have to be quarantined. The quarantine is where you lose everything.
Yeah, I don't think if players have to be quarantined, For Major League Baseball to quarantine enough people to put on a regular season does not seem logical. The NBA is talking about quarantining playoff teams. I can see that happening. I can see that working, because it's an indoor facility. They're gonna do it in Vegas at one of these massive casinos where you basically would not leave the property for a month.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, you have to have some kind of a way to contain this entire thing. And when you have that many teams for baseball, it's just because you have that many teams, that many players. Now you have that much support staff. It's just a greater amount of people, and the numbers game becomes the problem, I think, when you're trying to keep
the likelihood that one person will get it or have it
for sure
very high.
Oh yeah.
And then what if one person gets it? Do you shut the whole thing down?
You have to.
Do you quarantine everyone that?
That's exactly how this whole thing started.
Right.
So think about how this thing started with the Jazz. One guy got it, and then bam, it was a very, very fast.
So my God, how bad would it look if Major League Baseball does this quarantine thing, and then 2 weeks into it, someone has it, and then it spreads throughout all of the Major League Baseball? Like, that's gonna look so bad.
That's the thing. Like, I'm not talking about like people getting, let's just say like best case scenario. And someone does get it, right? Like, best case scenario in a bad case, that someone gets it and then it spreads a little bit. Everybody's okay, but they have to be quarantined and Like, that's the best case in a bad case scenario. All of a sudden now you might have people getting sick, like very sick, you know, potentially like, you know, who knows how sick. And then you have all that. Is it worth it? Like, is the best case scenario worth like a PR hit? No, none of
well,
it's
for owners
none of it's worth
who are
it.
Losing revenue. They probably say yes.
It's the thing is that the probabilities and the odds of it going bad are so high.
Right.
So high that it's, you know, you have to take some kind of an approach, understanding that it's almost a guarantee that it's going to happen. And then what does what do your margins look like? Cause you're spending money on setting these facilities up too. Like if they do this technology thing and they're, you know, outfitting all of these places and then all of a sudden 2 weeks, that's a hell of a lot of money down the tubes.
If they come back in July and they can play 60 to 80 games, I would actually be in favor of doing the Grapefruit and the Cactus League, because that is so different from a regular season that it again separates it from, oh, did your championship really count, right? Because the Yankees would be playing in a division with the Phillies, the Blue Jays, the Tigers, and the Pirates. And the National League and the American League is erased. So then we can fully say, yes, 2020 was a shortened season, but it was also entirely different. Whoever wins, they won the 2020 championship, but it was a totally different thing. It has an asterisk next to it, but we understand why, and it's so clear to see why. And I think that would be kind of fun to play in a division a little bit different for a short season for 1 year. I mean, shit, Phillies would be a fun matchup. They got Joe Girardi, Didi Gregorius, David Robertson. Like, hey, let's get that rivalry going. This it also helps the Yankees.
It does help the Yankees.
Their division is shittier than it would have been.
Yeah. If we're looking at it, it's definitely a worse division as far as talent. But yeah, I'm fine with that. Like, again, we've mentioned this. If you're going to do it and you're going to go into a shortened season at that point, you're calling it something totally different. You're calling it, this is what Arden Zwelling was talking about when I had him on for talking about the Blue Jays. He's like, you know what? Just call it something different. Be the different, you know, if it's different rules, if it is whatever, try to keep the rules of the actual game, but like change things up. Like, let's get weird. Like, why not? At that point, it's not a World Series championship. It is whatever this is called, you know, the Corona Cup, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. You get Corona beer to sponsor it. Boom, more revenue.
There you go. Do they want to be attached to that? I don't know.
The AL East in 2019 combined for 301 wins without the Yankees, and the new North Grapefruit League division, which I said was the Phillies, Blue Jays, Tigers, and Pirates, combined for 264 wins. So it's a worse division for the Yankees. They get rid of the Rays, who are one of the... Would you say the Rays are the third best team in the American League?
In the American League?
Behind the Yankees and Astros?
Yeah, they're up there.
Maybe they're...
The Twins are close. I think the Twins are close. I think that the... I think they're better than Oakland. I think they're better than...
Anaheim, yeah, with the addition of Rendon.
Yeah, I think they're better than Anaheim. Yeah, I think they're a dangerous team. And again, I've talked about this. Like, as much as I don't like talk about the Tampa Bay Devil Rays scaring me, a little scary. They're one of those teams that that have a lot of potential there that are sliding under the radar.
And so Nightingale wrote the article, and you can only trust Nightingale so much, but he said the playoffs would either have added wild card teams under this format, which I'd be fine with.
Did Nightingale come up with a 30-team wild card?
Well, no. So he said that's one of the things that they're discussing, is doing a regular season with these leagues, but then everyone just gets into a tournament. And to that I say, well, then what's the point of the regular season? Just do a tournament.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if that was his add-on to the plan. but no, it makes no sense. That makes absolutely no sense. Because then
what am I watching? I'm watching spring training.
Yeah. You're watching exhibition. Because it doesn't matter.
Because it certainly doesn't matter. Okay, we're gonna do 15 exhibition games to warm up for a tournament. Fine, but if you're gonna play 50 regular season exhibition games for seeding, get the frick out of here.
It's just an opportunity for people to get hurt. Is all it is. It's just waiting for people to get hurt. That's all we're doing.
No.
If they do that, I hope the Yankees quarantine their starters for however long they need to.
Just
get
shut
them
it
in
down at that point, because then we're just like playing exhibition baseball. And yeah, I guess that's better than no baseball, but it's not really.
No, I don't want that. I don't want some semblance of this game to be complete horseshit to come back. I don't want that. As much as people are pining for baseball to come back, it needs to come back in a capacity that feels like the game itself needs to be like, I'm sitting down, I'm drinking a beer, I got my bag of peanuts, and I'm watching a game that matters, and I'm watching good players play.
And under
that's all I need.
A shortened season, each game matters more.
Damn right it does. But if you start shortening the game to seven innings, I'm going to feel gypped every game. I'm going to feel gypped every single game. Give me two more innings. You're down one and that's it? You got to be kidding me.
Well, they could do things to shorten games like after 11 or 12 innings, it's just a tie and you move on. And and it's like some teams are going to have ties at the end of the year and you still just base it on win percentage. But we can't play 19 innings because of these circumstances.
Done.
Or have a home run derby to decide after 10 innings.
Okay, now we're getting a little more weird, but fine.
Why not?
Because then it's it's depending on outcome of a game for home run.
But if you have extra roster spots.
That's fine. It would be entertaining as all hell.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's just.
If you have extra roster spots, you just get some roided up freak to be your home run derby guy.
What if Canseco can? Yeah. You have to add a retired guy to be the home run guy. I would love that.
Chris Carter has a job again.
I don't know about that. He still doesn't open his eyes when the ball comes. So that's still hard to hit up, you know, like to hit the barrel of the bat.
Who would get on the Yankees?
Retired?
No, not retired. Who?
I feel like we should think about retired players coming back. This is a great opportunity.
But fine. But like, realistically, who on their roster is the home run derby guy?
Because a home run derby is realistic as a tiebreaker. Okay.
It might be. Under what they're talking about.
Jose Canseco coming back would be the most entertaining thing I've ever seen. Sure. All right, who would be the guy on our team?
Because like Judge is the obvious answer, Judge or Stanton, but like that's just going to be an injury rate waiting for happen. So who can hit a home run but not injure themselves?
Every single time? Who can hit a home run every single time? I would... Like, who would I trust the most? Like, I think DJ LeMahieu could probably just be a home run hitter if he wanted to be.
He could just but he's like a line drive guy, though. So, like, he's going to hit a line drive in the gap. I'm not picking LeMahieu. I love LeMahieu.
Yeah, it would probably be, like, I think Miguel Andujar could just yoke it out every time. He's also a doubles guy, too. But I think in a home run, in a setting like that, he barrels up.
Yeah, you're just looking for a launch angle guy, though. Because you're getting a 72-mile-an-hour batting practice fastball. You're just looking for launch angle.
So it's just a meatball too. It's not. It can't be like a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. I guess that defeats the purpose of the derby.
It defeats the purpose of the derby. It's a home run derby. You got either a pitching machine or a batting practice guy out there throwing.
Yeah, I mean, so the answer is Mike Ford, I guess.
We got there. Mike Ford. Mike Ford is a home run derby guy.
But everybody has a Mike Ford on their team.
Yeah. So what? Mike Ford's better.
All right.
Anything else that you would agree to, not the seven innings, but something where we're not going to play all night. We're going to just try and get as many games in as possible, but still keep a semblance of baseball, how we know it.
Yeah. I think if you start tweaking little things like that, you know, there needs to be a conclusion of a game. I agree with that. Like you cannot go with your 14, 15 inning games in a situation like this. You just can't. So there needs to be some kind of a way that you can identify a player. And I don't even think it's the derby. Like I think they would just go into a tie scenario and now you're going off base win percentage. That seems to be the most logical thing to do.
What if it's like a 10 run rule after seven innings or something?
All right. I don't like that either, but fine. Like, just play the other two.
I mean, yeah, it's just not play. Really. Those are rare circumstances anyway. And those innings usually take about 10 minutes because the other team's just up there doing nothing.
Right. Especially when you have a set roster and a set amount of players that you can only pull from. So nobody's going to really overexert.
Here's a problem that I think is going to arise because of the expanded rosters is more pitching changes. So they're going to have to limit that. They're going to have to say you have to identify a certain number of pitchers per game that can pitch. Or else we're going to sit here and the Tampa Rays are going to make a pitching change every two outs.
Yeah, that could be a problem. At the same time, you got to be careful.
Three batter minimum rule, but that only helps it so much if you have expanded rosters.
Right. Yeah, no, that's going to be one of those things. I mean, whatever the problems that will arise, whatever the problems that can arise, will arise. There will be people taking advantage of every single possible thing they can, even if this is for a cup that is not called a World Series and it doesn't have the same, you know, trophy and status and all that crap. People will take advantage.
And then we got the Japan plan, which Tim Kirkjian talked about on SportsCenter, which MLB has looked into the possibility of going over to Japan, where the situation is more under control than it is in the U.S., and playing in all of those stadiums. They would play afternoon games, MLB would, and then the Japan League would play night games. An afternoon in Japan, 1 o'clock in the afternoon in Japan, is the middle of the night. It's 13 hours. So it's 12 a.m. in New York City.
So, I mean, I understand that the Japanese teams wouldn't want to give up their games in the evenings. But if you're going to do that and you're going to pay people off, like, why not switch that so that the major league teams can play in the evening over there and then it's, you know, early morning at least for the East Coast, or, you know, at least it's an opportunity to wake up and be around.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel they would lose.
They think they would get ratings, but I'm sorry. Only so many people are going to watch a baseball game from 1 a.m. till 6 a.m. in the morning.
I'm not going to be one of them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm sorry.
Now you're just ruining my life. Yeah. Now you're just ruining my life.
Like, Nick Kirby will watch. That's basically it.
Yeah. And there will be people that watch. But if you have any semblance of a job or a family or, you know, a kid that doesn't matter when baseball is on, he's going to wake up at the same time every day, you're screwed. So no, that's not happening. I can't adjust my entire life for that.
Yeah. I mean, that is just Kirkjian probably got like a text message from a source being like, hey, we've discussed everything, including this. And this is the most outlandish thing that we could have discussed.
Again, man, like this is stuff being thrown off of a wall. I truly believe they're just like, let's throw shit out there and see what the reactions are. And then we can find some kind of mishmash in the middle and figure something out.
You check out any of the players, MLB The Show League? They've been playing video games against one another. Tommy Canley is the Yankees guy.
Yeah, I've been seeing some of it. I saw the Judge played with Snell the other day as well. There's some entertaining stuff. This Blake Snell he's really into it. He's become like the ambassador for baseball, basically.
Yeah, I saw that clip of him pulling himself. I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah, there's another, you know, Judge. They've been doing a lot of media stuff. Like they had, was it CJ McCollum or was somebody talking to Judge, you know, basically naming him the next Derek Jeter, or like he feels like that guy. And we've been talking about that for like 4 years. Every Yankees fan has been talking about that for like 4 years. But that's cool.
I mean, it's fine. I mean, I guess like.
Or Damon Lillard. That's who it was. It wasn't McCollum.
You know, fine. People are going to watch this. It's cool that they're doing this and it's fun to see players into it. But like, I only can care so much about video games, like watching people play video games. Just not
I mean,
me.
That's you though. I
know a lot of people are into it. I know.
It's huge. And I got something to say about this. So we've been doing these tournaments, the 161 boys, if you haven't checked out their podcast, go give them a listen. They do a good job. The Boys of 161st Street is a new Yankees podcast on the Bronx Pinstripes site. So they've put these tournaments together that are, you know, basically people are going out and playing in a bracket style tournament. I think with this past one, we had Joe's McFly was in it. Gary Sheffield Jr. was in it. I got my ass kicked in the first round again. So I'm realizing that I'm never going to be able to compete with these guys. I definitely thought in the beginning that I was going
well,
to be
able
to.
What gave you that idea? You only bought a PS4 like 9 years after.
Because I'll tell you why. Because I used to play all the time. All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's
on
the
what,
same control.
Sega Genesis?
No, PS3, bitch. It's like, it's been going on. Like we've
you
had
an NES.
It's the same controller. It's the same gameplay, right? But here's the problem. The reps, man. Like these guys are playing all freaking day and all night. And I forgot how much they play. You know, I forgot how much I used to play when I was like in my early 20s because it was a lot. And I just don't do that now and I can't. So I'm getting smoked.
Because you're an adult with a child and a job.
I'm getting smoked and it's frustrating as hell. I was trying to stream it and I was getting so mad that I turned the stream off because I didn't trust myself.
Yeah, I know it's me because a lot of people are into it. I would actually be more interested if the players were doing something other than playing a baseball video game.
Yeah.
Like playing a different, even if it's a video game, like just something entirely different.
Yeah, they're doing that too, though. They're all on there. They're on Twitch and playing a bunch of stuff. So
yeah,
it's entertaining. Like I can't sit there and watch, you know, a guy play for an entire game, but I'll peek in every now and then again and watch it. But
see, the thing is, the good parts are going to be on Twitter. So I'll see those.
Well, yeah, I think what you're really looking. Here's the thing: like they're playing a game, but who gives a shit about the game? That's not really what you're there for is the commentary. You're there for the commentary and the shit talking, and that's what's fun. So I see that for sure. With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, guys, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline.ag, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From their online casinos to poker and blackjack, they're bringing Vegas directly to you guys. Missing the NFL? No problem. BetOnline has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations that you can still bet on. You can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. All open 24 hours a day and all online. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online wagering solution.
Okay, a couple Yankees topics before we wrap this episode up. Just want to, if you have not checked it out yet, encourage you guys to go check out the most recent A Brief History episode. This one is about Roger Clemens' Yankees legacy, or as you called it, oh my goodness gracious, the Roger Clemens saga. I liked that name better. I think you should have just taken the liberty of changing it when you uploaded it. But this was maybe my favorite one researching, because there was a few things I didn't know. First of all, I didn't know that the reaction to Clemens in 99 was so negative. And it was because David Wells was a beloved guy. I get that. I knew that.
Right.
But that brawl at the end of 1998 was a lasting thing in people's minds of Clemens. And he started the brawl because Ricky Lede hit a sac fly, which I found to be the funniest part of the whole thing, is that Clemens was such an angry mother effer. And he's like, this guy almost took me deep. This backup outfielder almost took me deep. I'm not going to stand for that.
But was it because of that, or was it because of some kind of body language that Lede gave him?
Probably was some body language.
That's probably what it was. He probably pimped it a little bit too much, which was, you know, either taking a step like a little too slow or whatever it was, where he thought it was out and Clemens it got caught, and that's what probably started it on.
So he was definitely seen as a jackass, which I get, but then he was our jackass.
It wasn't just a jackass, though. He was like a villain. Almost.
A villain,
like,
but then he was our villain. It's totally different when the villain's on your team.
Yes, but he's also a villain that used to be on the Red Sox, too, which is a big deal.
That never bothered me.
It did then for a lot of people.
I wasn't old enough to know Clemens on the Red Sox, but now thinking back to it, like, I don't care that Roger Clemens was on the Red Sox for the bulk of his career. Maybe people who were 25 when the trade happened did care. I get that. But Clemens had some great big moments with the Yankees. He was also, he had his worst seasons for the Yankees by far.
Yeah. Right.
But I also can't help but imagine how different the Yankees 2004 to 2006 would have been if Clemens had stayed on the Yankees.
Yeah. It could have been. I mean, when you start looking at those things and you start looking at history and seeing how he could have impacted some of these teams. I mean, he was still a difference maker. Like the guy was a phenomenal pitcher, and just the having him out there as Roger Clemens was a big deal. And I think that's one of those things. Like you have a guy that's a symbol. He's like a statue of Roger Clemens. Even if it's not the same guy, like you know who's going out there. It's a psychological impact for the other team too.
Certainly. Yeah. So I asked the question on Twitter: do you like Roger Clemens? And based on the vote. 67% said yes, they like Roger Clemens. But based on the people, like the angry people, they reply. And they reply with why they hate Roger Clemens. So the 32% of people that don't like Roger Clemens, they're a strong minority.
Yeah, and they have, I'd venture that it's probably the older demographic too. The ones that do remember you know, they take the Boston thing into their mind, and then they have a negative thought about him when he comes onto the team, and then they pick up on every single negative thing. You also had some Mets fans in there, I'm sure, too.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to talk about was a topic I wrote about a couple weeks ago. What is the most rewatchable Yankee game?
Before you get on there quickly, just talking about the Roger Clemens Mets Piazza throwing the bat thing. One, By the way, phenomenal episode. Really good episode. I listened to it way too many times for unconventional reasons. But when he threw the bat and you look back at that, uh-huh. I'm like looking at geometry and like looking at where his eyes are looking. I was really trying to dissect it instead of like just see that moment and look how crazy that moment was. And I'm giving him like a little bit of a benefit of the doubt in a point where I think he was angry and like annoyed and just like raged up.
Yes.
And I do think that he was throwing the bat barrel away. I actually do think that he was throwing it away. I don't think he was throwing it at Piazza, because if you look at the trajectory of said bat, it took a weird hop, definitely bounced backwards towards him, which made it look way worse. But where he was initially throwing it, there's no way he was leading Piazza, because Piazza, you didn't know
he was leading Piazza over the middle on like a 10-yard in route.
Exactly. Yeah. This wasn't like a cross slant pattern where you're avoiding a zone coverage and a linebacker. Not happening here. Like, you're not throwing him open. You're not trying to hit him on the run. I think that he was actually trying to throw it ahead of him towards the dugout, and it came out of his hand weird. And like, who throws a broken bat barrel? Like, that comes, you don't expect what's going to happen when you throw that. And he's throwing at a weird angle. He's going like, you know, a little bit like three quarters. So, you know, there are a lot of things that went back into it. Huh?
Counter to that is, why did he throw it so hard?
Because he's angry. I'm not saying that he's not angry.
I know the answer.
I'm not saying that he's not angry and not all jacked up. But I don't think he was intentionally trying to throw it at Piazza.
I agree with that. I learned from this in reading about Clemens and listening to some clips of him. He is not present really on the mound. He's outside of his head.
Right.
He's a maniac. He can control where the ball goes. He can't control anything else.
Right.
Number one being his emotions.
Yeah. Well, especially when you're regimented. when that cycle hits, baby. You know, a lot
but he
more
was
focus
always
goes
like
towards
that.
Other
he
things.
Was like that from day one in Boston.
Yes.
So maybe he was doing whatever from day one in Boston, but that was always his mentality. So yeah, fine. He was always a psychopath on the mound, and then you get jacked up, and then you're an extra psychopath.
I mean, there's a way of looking at that though, because I think a lot of guys, when you see get to that point in their career, you know, getting to the major leagues, being as good as they are, being one of the best. I mean, look at you look across the league at some of the best pitchers. These guys are in the moment. Of course they are. They compartmentalize everything and they try to focus everything that they can possibly have, every energy, every movement, every breath towards what they're doing at home plate. Right. So when you put that in there and then all of a sudden you have a little bit of a crazy pill inside you and a little bit of a crazy, crazy thing stuck in your ass. Now that is coming out in another level and you really can't control yourself. And I think a lot of it was just like perfect moment, perfect scenario, bottled up, adrenaline, all of these things
World
happening.
Series game, the first matchup with Piazza since he hit him in the head in the summer.
Yeah, a lot of things.
All the talk up to that moment was what's going to happen in this showdown. And so Clemens is just so amped up. Someone sent me an article, which I missed in my research, but Joe Torre apparently in his book, The Yankee Years, which I read, but I read it a real long time ago, so I didn't remember this, said Roger Clemens went into the clubhouse and cried after that.
Yeah, probably because he was so freaking emotionally.
But he,
like,
so he did that. Went
Do you
and
think?
Cried
he, I don't think for, those were cries of like anything else besides just like outpour of of anything.
But you know what? He did that and then went out and threw an 8-inning shutout, one hitter.
Yeah, it was a bodily function that just had to like leave his body. You know, it had no emotion behind it.
So Roger Clemens had definitely ups and downs in 99. He was not great in 99. He got rocked in the ALCS, pitched well in the World Series. And then in the 2000 playoffs, do you realize that game against Seattle in the ALCS was the best game he ever pitched in his entire life, including the 20 strikeout games? Because the 20 strikeout games had more hits, more walks, and in one of them he gave up, I think, 2 runs. In this shutout against the Mariners, he gave up 1 hit and struck out 15. It was by Baseball Reference does game score. It basically tallies based on like what you do. So you get a point for a strikeout. You get a point for an extra inning pitch. You get a point for an extra inning with no hits, etc. He had a 98 game score, which is the highest of his career.
Yeah. No, it's pretty crazy when you think about that. And yeah, I mean, we've been talking about Clemens now for the past week and a half. So I've seen that.
I like to go back because like I don't know. I think he's a fascinating...
Oh, he's extremely... He's a polarizing character. You get any of these polarizing characters, I mean, you go to the other side of it and look at what Curt Schilling and what a lunatic he was, too, and like all the crazy things around him.
You understand why Curt Schilling is... Curt Schilling is less ignored now than Roger Clemens. That is horseshit.
Yeah. Well, Roger Clemens is also like... Step back a little bit too. I feel like he's definitely
because he was ostracized. The Yankees basically shunned him after 2007. They're just like, yeah. Dude, we want nothing to do with you anymore.
You have bad PR around you, and the Yankees will dismiss you. That's A-Rod? The number one thing. Well, yeah, they kind of did. I mean, but now
he's back. You got A-Rod Knight.
Is he back?
Yeah, he's back.
Is he back?
Yeah.
Did you see that video of him with J-Lo doing an Instagram live with P. Diddy, who J-Lo used to be married to, and then A-Rod talking about how he used to love P. Diddy's song, like him and Mace were it's the weirdest video I've ever seen in my life. It was on there last night. It's so strange. You gotta watch it. and then A-Rod started dancing, and they were doing some dance party. It was a whole, there were so many things to talk about. And A-Rod was fake drinking the El Presidente beer again. Fake drinking it. Just, I mean, putting it to lips and then immediately talking afterwards with teeth. Like, nothing was in his mouth.
Do you know why? I bet A-Rod strikes me as one of these guys that he has, like, one beer and then starts acting psychotic.
Annoying.
Yeah, annoying. Like an annoying, drunk teenager.
So annoying. He's probably so annoying after two beers.
So he's
and J-Lo knows
himself.
That, too. J-Lo's like, don't drink any beer, Alex.
But why don't they just open the beer and then pour water in it? And then
because it wouldn't look the same. You don't have the same like top. If you drink a beer and then you bring it down every single time, you see that foam.
Get some non-alcoholic beer.
A-Rod doesn't like the taste of beer. Okay, let's be honest. I don't like the.
He's
taste.
A wine spritzer guy.
He probably if he drinks at all, but yeah, it's a wine spritzer day. He's a Boone's Farm guy.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that Clemens being ignored is... I wish the Yankees would not ignore him. Like, he should be invited to old-timers days. He should be involved in 20-year celebration-type deals. They didn't do a 99 celebration deal last year, even though
they
did.
Because we were exhausted.
Right, because they did a 96 and a 98 one. But had they done it, do you think he would have been invited?
No.
That's bullshit.
I don't think he would have been invited. I mean... The Yankees do what the Yankees do, man. They stay away from those types of things as much as they can. They've tried to distance themselves from A-Rod a little bit. Like, he's not as involved with the Yankees as much anymore.
Jason Giambi is invited to Old Timers Day. He's had as many steroid implications as anyone.
Not different. They're different steroid implications.
No, I know. Clemens fought it in court. I get it.
Yes. He's got pictures of him in court, comments. He adamantly still denies it. There's books being written about him. Like, he was the focus of it. It was him and Bonds. They were the two
poster
child.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's why.
But Bonds is not
slowly coming
from
back.
Baseball. Bonds was a hitting coach.
Yes, and he also came
Could
back.
Could you see Roger Clemens being a pitching coach? Can you see a baseball team hiring Roger Clemens as a pitching coach?
Not right now, no.
But they hired Bonds. The Marlins hired Bonds as their hitting coach.
Yeah, I know. Bonds also stayed away from the. He hasn't. When's the last time you heard Bonds talk?
It's been
a long time.
His head shrunk. That's all I know.
Did it?
Oh, yeah. Google Barry Bonds right now. His head is half the size it was in 2003.
I think Roger Clemens is still playing in like beer league.
Well, he played in the last time he did something in like the Atlantic League in like 2012, and then he's still doing stuff with his kids, I think.
His son was in the Astros organization for Cody, is that his name? Cody Clemens, who's a catcher, I think.
Yeah,
I don't know where he is now. Barry Bonds. I mean, he looks like a jacked 50-year-old guy,
but his head is way smaller.
Yeah, look, he looks like Pittsburgh Barry Bonds.
Yeah,
like I'm seeing two pictures of him now, and him in Pittsburgh, and it looks identical.
Wait, yeah.
Although his neck's a little, he looks like he's
got.
Then
he ballooned in San Francisco for 10 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So back to the rewatchable Yankee games. I posed the question on Twitter. I said, if you could forget the result of one Yankees game in history, and then rewatch it like you were watching it the first time, and relive the moment and the emotion, what would it be? Now, some people didn't understand the question. They thought I meant you can change the result of the game, because a lot of people responded with Game 7, 2001 World Series. Now, why would you ever want to go back and relive those moments, those horrific moments when Mariano blows the save? You can't change the outcome. All you can do is forget what happened and go rewatch it and get all excited again like it's the first time you ever watched it. So that's the question. We're going to do this episode. It'll be a standalone episode later in the week. And yeah, let us know on Twitter what you guys think the answer to that question is. If you could forget the result of one game and rewatch it, relive all the emotions of the moment, what would it be? I also wrote an article about it. It was up on the website about a week and a half ago. The 10 most rewatchable Yankees games. Some writers from Bronx Pinstripes also contributed to it. Now listen, I'm sure there's games from like 1940 that are amazing, but they're not going to be on this list because there's
can't
no,
watch them. Can't watch. Can't watch them.
But also, I'm not going to go back and dive into Baseball Reference and try and figure out like what was the craziest comeback that the Yankees had in the 1936 season. Like, I'm sorry, I'm just not going to do that. So these are
the
ones that you lived
20 years ish.
Well, some of them are from the 70s because we have some writers who lived through them. And I get that. And there's even one I thought of from the 70s that I wasn't alive for, but my dad says was like one of his most memorable games ever watching.
Cool. Yeah, so, no, those are great. I think the majority of the people that contributed to this, probably you're going to see a lot of games within the last 15 to 20 years. But yeah, I think those are, look, I think pulling back from some of our parents too, and like identifying, and I know we have some of the guys that are, you know, from a different era. Like, we take things in eras, and Bronx Pinstripes, we have people from all eras of baseball that remember different games, and they're awesome for so many different reasons. So I think that's what goes into it. We'll retweet the article that you wrote too, and put this out again just so everybody can see it.
Cool. Keep the reviews coming. Thank you everyone for submitting a review. We'll get to those next week. Submit your mailbag questions. I didn't do any mailbags this week, but we'll do them next Monday's show. Any final words, Scott?
No, just, you know, another week of this. Let's hope that everybody is, we've seen like curves flattening and like some like positive news being sprinkled out there. So I just hope that it continues, that everybody's out there being safe and staying, non-crazy, and, that we can get through this relatively quickly and still have baseball. Cause I feel like it's starting to feel like maybe there's something on the horizon. Who knows?
There's a lot of smoke, but maybe. I don't know if there's a fire yet.
Maybe.
Talk to you guys in a few days.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.